We don't have the political head of the department. We don't have the accounting officer, which is the DG. And we are dealing with the annual report. So I'll just, before, like I said, before my opening remarks, I just want to check actually what is happening. Because my understanding, this meeting, we were supposed to have held it earlier. And we changed our program because of the request from the Department of Science and Technology, indicating that they had prior commitment, so we should reschedule our meeting, which we did, because the indication was that they wanted to be part of this meeting. We have played our part, we have compromised, we have rescheduled the meeting, but it seems as if the DG nor the minister or the deputy minister is not here. Maybe before we can proceed, I would just want to check from the officials what actually what is happening. Can we get that elaborate?
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Sincere apologies. I am Marjorie Pius, one of the Deputy Directors General, and unfortunately, our Minister, Deputy Minister, and GG had to be present in a cabinet meeting today, and this has taken them out of this meeting. This is the presentation that we have prepared, and which we had hoped to give on the earlier occasion, and I trust that you will accept that I deliver this presentation on behalf of the accounting officer and the minister and deputy minister. I have with me the CFO, and I have also the acting head of the governance division in the Department of Science and Technology.
I don't think it's for me to decide before the committee. You know, I'm just going to open this for the committee members just to say what is their input on the matter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, Madam Chair, we had the same problem yesterday with our previous chairperson or with our other chairperson as well, that departments, ministers, and DG wasn't available. I don't have a problem if the minister can't make it, but then his delegate, the second in charge, his deputy, and specifically the first, the DG, must be there. He is the responsible person that must answer our questions. It has no purpose for us to listen at the report from officials, and then when we need to ask the questions, because if we listen to the report, I can listen to it, but I've got some questions which I want to raise, and then someone must take accountability, and that accountable officer or politician is not here to do so. So to me, it's a waste of time. It's a waste of public money to get the people here. If those people already asked us for putting out this meeting till today, I mean, it's inconvenient for this committee already to postpone it till today. And now they didn't pitch to me. That is unacceptable, and I believe, Madam Chair, you should write a letter to that department with this discuss of this committee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, Chairperson, thanks. I want to concur with what Honourable Fafa has just said, that we went out of our way to allow the department to come and make its presentation by changing dates, which was fair enough from the side of the committee. Now they are not here. I think at least the minister would have tried by almost to find somebody who can lead the delegation. And that means that I support what Honorable Papa is saying, that we really cannot sit here and waste another time by allowing the officials to present to us. Must find another time to do so, with the minister here or the deputy minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it is not good manners to give the chairperson of this select committee beforehand notice of what is the problem. And all the email and telephone numbers is on the parliamentary website. So if they don't have it, so then they can just go to that website and get it and give you a courtesy call about the situation. That is the one thing. And the other thing, I also in agreement with what my honorable colleagues are saying here, and I think that is the situation, and that is the step which we have to take here this morning. And that letter must be very strict and straight to the point to the accounting officer and also the minister. And Madam Chairperson, yesterday I asked the previous the chair of that select committee that we must take this up with the speaker and the chairperson of the NCOP, and if it needs to be also with the president. We can't accept this handling situation, especially in the NCOP. They can't take us for granted, and that's the new point. We must stand firm on that point. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. Just to add to what honorable members said, you know, it's just unfortunate that political heads, including the DG, they forget us that we here at Parliament, we are doing oversight on them. We are doing oversight on them. We take extra miles to send the program in the advance. But, you know, it's so disturbing. We don't even have an official apology. What does that mean to us? Is it a sign of undermining this committee? I just want to know, is it a sign of undermining this committee? We are here as public representatives. We are here delegated by the electorate. We are representing people here. We are not representing ourselves. And most especially from the provincial and from the NCOP, we are here representing the province. You know, I think I'm going to compare with other members that we are going to write a letter, because the same, you know, we've got the same excuses, same apologies, over and up. Ministers, when they're supposed to come to the NCOP, they are going to the cabinet. Since we started, everybody is going to the cabinet. But in NA, yesterday they were in the cabinet, but when we find out they were in the NA, what is happening? Why can't we take NCOP very seriously? I think it's our responsibility as these members just to make sure that, you know, our leaders, ministers, whoever is responsible is going to play his role as much as we are playing our role. I'm going to give over to the acting, this the acting DG or the DDG. Yes, and on that note, we are going to write a letter. We are going as a committee, we'll write the letter to the minister and the deputy minister, and also to the chairperson of the NCOP. Firstly, just that it's unfortunate that it's for the first time that we interact with cyber technology. And, you know, I feel that the atmosphere is not fun. It's not nice. I must just indicate, because we've met, we have interacted with other departments. But we are so much disappointed that our first meeting with the Department of Science and Technology is not, the atmosphere is not nice. But firstly, I must just indicate that we are from the provinces, we represent provinces. We are going to interact with the department. We are going to deal with the issues as they appear or as they reflect at the provincial level. So I don't think that it will be anything personal. We are just here to do our work, and we expect the department to give us the report or to give us the truth of what is happening in the department. On that note, I'm just going to give over. Let me start firstly by asking the honorable members to introduce themselves as it is for the first time that we indicate interact with the department. Maybe I should start with myself, just to indicate that, as the chairperson, I'm Wendy McCarthy, the chairperson of the Select Committee on Education and Recreation from the Northwest. Thank you.
Nomonde Hasmeni from Northwest.
Ha go lebwe modulo studio le ho hlompha. Le bitsola ka ke diti ya ke mogadi wa moshoti ke tswa province ya Freestata ke se thotsa committee ya lefapha la education. Ke a lebwe modulo studio.
Good morning everybody. I'm Michael De Villiers. I'm also a member of the Select Committee and I'm from the Western Cape. Good morning, my name is Willem Faber. I'm also a member of the Select Committee and I'm from the Northern Cape representing the NCRP Northern Cape. Thank you.
Good morning everybody. My name is Wusem Mube. I'm from Gauteng. I'm a member of the Select Committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Oma Borodo.
Sanbonana Sipoplaki, a member of the Select Committee. I'm from the Northwest Province.
I'm going to give over to the department to introduce something.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I am, as I've indicated before, Marjorie Pius, one of the Deputy Directors General at the Department of Science and Technology.
Morning, Chair, and morning, Honourable Members. My name is Malokholwan Malapani. I'm the CFO, Department of Science and Technology.
Good morning. My name is David Makola. I'm the Acting Chief Operating Officer, Department of Science and Technology.
Morning, everybody. My name is Tracy Berenke. I'm DA to the Chairperson, Ms. Mafadi.
Good morning. My name is Mzuyanda Langa. I'm the Secretary to the Committee.
Let me just also request a question behind us. I don't know whether are we safe or what.
I'm Mama Chumulukwane from Language Services, Language Practitioner.
I'm Susan Tia from Language Services, working here at Parliament.
Morning, everyone. I'm Bongile Mokhango. I'm a committee assistant in Parliament.
We have all introduced ourselves. I'm just going to hand over to the department to give us the briefing on the annual report.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I realize that maybe the item on apologies has not been done. May I, at this stage, apologize for Ms. Rancho, who's held in the office of the chief whip, and apologize for our coming late as the whip. We had a programming meeting, and we are expected to attend a joint programming meeting at 11 o'clock, and apologize.
Over to
the department. Thanks, Madam Chairperson. Madam Chairperson and members of the Select Committee, I trust you have all received copies of the annual report as well as copies of the presentation, which we will now be doing. And once again, I must emphasize sincere apologies. And we do take it that it would have been the courteous thing to have actually given you fair warning that the DG Minister and Deputy Minister are not available. Now, in terms of the presentation, the structure of the presentation, I'm going to just give you a brief overview of the objectives of the department, introduce you to the different programs that we have, that's the different divisions within the department, and then talk to some of the selected indicators and the performance related to those indicators. Share with you some of the service delivery highlights during this last year. The financial performance of the department, I will hand over to our CFO to talk through those. Human resources information, we'll touch on that, mainly the demographics and how we're building the department. And then I do have a few slides on the performance of the entities, the science councils that report to the Department of Science and Technology. If there's time and if the members wish, then we will go into those slides. But I suspect that you will actually be having those science councils coming to actually present to you themselves. So you may want to skip that last part. So then into the presentation. The Department of Science and Technology has four priority objectives. The first is to develop the innovation capacity of the science system and contribute to socio-economic development. We actually hang all of our work around what we call twin goals of social development and economic development, addressing the plight of the poor as well as wealth creation. The second objective is to develop appropriate human capital for research, development, and innovation. A large proportion of the DSC's budget is spent on developing human capital, researchers to fuel the South African economy. The third objective is to build world-class research, development, and innovation infrastructure. This is something that actually sets South Africa apart on the African continent, and it also sets South Africa as a strategic player within the developing nations and the developed world. And lastly, to position South Africa as a strategic international research, development, and innovation partner and a destination to develop South Africa's knowledge generation capacity. Now, the programs that we have structured to deliver on these objectives include our administrative and governance division called Corporate Services and Governance. Program 2 is called Research, Development and Innovation, and this is the collective of people, managers, a branch where we spend a lot of our resources on frontiers type research, development, and innovation. So that is your biotechnology, your nanotechnology, your hydrogen and fuel cells, and so on. That is the RDI one. Program 3 is international cooperation and resources. And this is where we engage with our bilaterals and multilaterals with other nations. Program 4 is devoted to human capital and knowledge systems. And this program 4 interfaces quite strongly with the National Research Foundation, where we set up research chairs at universities, centers of research excellence, and strive to develop a strong base of researcher capability. We also have Indigenous Knowledge Systems housed in that program 4. Program 5 is devoted to socio-economic partnerships. And this is a program that works very strongly across government departments, with the DTI, Minerals and Energy, and so on. We're also very active in this program 5 with striking the right kind of relationships with provincial governments. And in actual fact, the program 5 is in the process of setting up what they call regional innovation forums with provincial governments to make sure that what's happening at the national level is also an approach that is advocated at the provincial level. Now, I said I would touch on some of the selected indicators that were in our business plan and corporate strategy and look at the actual performance. Of course, government encourages us not to just focus on a single year, but to do some comparative analysis of our performance. And so you'll find that what we had set in terms of targets for leveraging international resources, you've seen a growth, quite a dramatic growth, over this past three-year period. And I might add that in this past 2008-09 year, we actually went beyond that 189 million target. In fact, the target was 100 million. We have actually secured European Commission funding. We've secured funding from Finland, and that is set at about 338 million. So in other words, we're going beyond funding that is available to us from the South African government, and we're leveraging resources from abroad. From that Finnish funding, the money I mentioned we leveraged from Finland, we actually have driven through what is called the COFISA program, done substantial work in at the provincial level. COFISA is dedicated to South African-Finland cooperation. We also have exceeded our targets in terms of bilateral projects. You can see from 2006-07 we had 60. In 2008-09 we're now riding at 86. The students on special bursaries, this is to try and retain honours and masters students so that they stay in the system. They don't feel the pressure to go out and earn, an income, a salary, rather than complete their doctoral studies. We've given out 271 honours and 50 masters bursary awards. This is an increased bursary amount from the general one that students get. We're trying to entice youngsters to stay at university. The number of interns, these are graduates who are unemployed. You see we are riding at 174 in that past year. This is to ensure that we as much as possible rescue science graduates who can't find employment. And this is predominantly amongst black graduates. Generally we find that they complete their degrees and they can't find work immediately. And some experiential training in a science council or in our universities of technology help them. 1 year's internship and the next thing they place even before that year is over. The total numbers of centers of excellence, we've moved beyond the 7 and introduced an additional one to take us to 8. Yeah, we are struggling in terms of getting funding out of Treasury to go the full gauntlet in terms of our centers of excellence. The same too with our research chairs. The fiscus is quite tight and we can't seem to break past the mark on 72. We've just recently launched another 10, but we couldn't count them in the 2008 year because we only delivered on them in this year. So the number has gone ahead. We have a target in the department of putting in place 210 of these research chairs by 2010. It doesn't seem like we're going to get it, but that is primarily because of the economic squeeze. The number of PhDs and postdoctoral fellowships supported at science councils and higher education institutions, we would like to see this number much higher, but we at least are seeing growth, considerable growth. The number of joint science and technology project activities between the DSC and other departments, that has grown to 14. So we are a department that firmly believes that science and technology doesn't happen in a vacuum. It must happen in partnership with minerals, with agriculture, with energy, and with provincial government. And we actually have designed what we call a memorandum of understanding, which we sign with those departments. Number of flagship projects supporting strategic areas of R&D, we've increased that by 2, and there are currently 13. These are the kinds of initiatives that you find running in what we call our advanced manufacturing technology strategy, our advanced metals initiative, and as well as in line with the ICT R&D strategy. So now we go to the programs themselves and some of the service delivery highlights. The program one, as I indicated, is corporate services and governance, and their aims and goals, that they are responsible for the overall management of the DSC, the administrative, the financial side. They provide central support to funded organizations to comply with good governance practices and alignment to the strategic focus of the National System of Innovation. These organizations include the HSRC, the CSIR, and a newly created institution called the Technology Innovation Agency, as well as the Africa Institute of South Africa, and another new institute, the Space Agency. I'm sure members are aware we just launched Sumbandila SAP. Other work in this program is a monitoring and evaluation of these science councils which I have mentioned. In terms of performance, KPIs, key performance indicator reports, were completed by our science councils, our institutions, and we actually have a report on the performance of these SETIs. I'm sure members at some stage would appreciate if David, my colleague here, were to come at a later stage to present to you on that report. Something we are extremely proud of and which I trust the members will recognize as our commitment to reporting accurately, honestly, and timely on the performance of the department. We are the only department in government that received an unqualified audit opinion, with the Auditor General reporting that no significant findings have been identified on performance information. I would like for the members to be given leeway to repeat that. We were the only department that received an unqualified audit. And I think to some extent it was the amount of time we spent with the AG's representatives, the National Treasury, as well as KPMG and other institutions that are, let's say, experts at understanding how to manage performance reporting. So we spent a few months, David here was spearheading some of that work around designing the kind of reporting template. So I think that in the next annual report, you'll see an even further improvement, and we hope that we will once again treat you to an unqualified audit report. The second program, as I indicated, is research, development, and innovation. Their strategic goal is to provide policy leadership in long-term, that future, frontier-type, and cross-cutting research and innovation. And so the sub-programs you find here is in space science, hydrogen and energy, innovation instruments and planning, and biotechnology and health. This is just to give you a flavor of the program. During the course of the last year, the following pieces of legislation were served and were approved, brought into effect. The Intellectual Property Rights Act, this one is to ensure that the South African government optimizes the return from intellectual property that was generated from public-funded research. So it doesn't regulate what's happening in the private sector. The focus is on what's happening with money the government paid out to universities and science councils. The Technology Innovation Agency Act, this one brought into effect a new animal. This animal is going to help us address what we call the innovation chasm, where we say we spend so much money on research, but we're actually struggling to see that research translated into commercial outcomes. And then, of course, we also saw the South African National Space Agency Act, which will see that institution up and running in the near future. Then we have, in terms of our service delivery achievements of that program, there was the launch in September of 2008 of the South African designed electric prototype vehicle for demonstration. So it was demonstrated in September 2008. Where things stand is that the department is no longer very active in terms of the car jewel. But what we are still actively engaged in is the R&D around battery technology and so on, which I'll talk to later. Other departments like DTI and the IDC and so on are moving forward because it's now reached a stage of commercialization. We've launched the hydrogen and fuel cell technology strategy. In terms of this new institution tier, there's an interim project management office and a process managers in place, so we're confident that we'll start to see some progress there. There's an ingestion system for the reception of the China-Brazil Earth Resource Satellite and the Argentinian satellite. Ingestion system data is now in place. What we were able to achieve through our multilateral and bilateral work is a commitment by China, Brazil, as well as Argentina to provide South Africa and African countries free access to their satellite data. Of course, you get the free access, but you, on your part in your country, have still got to download those images. You've still got to manipulate data out of that. So this is why South Africa had to put in place a system that would be easily able to receive the Argentinian, Chinese, and Brazilian data. This data from these satellites of these countries was not only made available to South Africa, but to Africa as a whole. And we know that we have to play a leadership role on the continent around that. We are very often asked whether all of the work that we're doing has any bearing on South African industry. And so just to give you a flavor of some of that integration within local industry on the ground, in implementing DFC's hydrogen and fuel cell technologies RDI strategy, which we call HISA, Hydrogen South Africa, PetroSA, we are happy to report, has invested 10 million for the construction of a HISA laboratory for HISA system integration. So we're not doing this alone. We've actually got PetroSA on board. Formatec, which is a German fuel membrane producer, has signed a technology transfer agreement and invested 300,000 into HISA system integration. This is the level of confidence that even foreign industrial partners see in South Africa's capabilities on fuel cell technology. We have a tripartite partnership with DST, Anglo Platinum, and Johnson Matthey for fuel cell development. Evidence of this, Anglo Platinum has launched a 100 million rand development fund to promote commercialization of the Platinum Group metal technologies in South Africa. Members of this committee are no doubt aware that South Africa has vast platinum reserves, and platinum, in terms of beneficiation, is an important mineral ore for the fuel cell technology environment. Anglo Platinum has invested $5 million for design, manufacture, and assembly of fuel cells, and this is something that DST has. They're actually matching what DST had put in place. This is what that car, the Jewel, looks like. I mentioned that it was, the demonstration was launched in 2008, September. And of note is that the battery of this car accounts for 50% of the cost of this electric vehicle. And so that is where most of South Africa's IT lies. Not so much in the construction of the car, but actually in the battery itself. And South Africa, we note, has a long history of research and development in advanced battery technology. We have already registered patents as well as academic publications on the subject. And the DST, in moving forward, is setting up platforms to consolidate and develop South African capabilities in advanced battery technologies. We know that this is actually where our niche area is, our competencies. This program, RDI, also has a focus, as I said, on biotechnology and the bioeconomy. And I'm presenting here just to give you a sense that we don't only work off what we have in terms of the biosciences and biotechnology, but we also take into account environmental issues and our rich biodiversity heritage. South Africa as a country is the third mega biodiverse country in the world. In other words, we hold in third place in terms of how rich we are in biodiversity heritage. Members are aware that just in terms of the fynbos, it's a plant kingdom that exists nowhere else in the world. So we try to look at sustainable development in extracting value from our biodiversity heritage, looking at our indigenous knowledge holdings, looking at the social impact of benefit sharing as we exploit our biodiversity heritage and we use for economic gain our bioscience and biotechnology capabilities. So those three circles show you that we actually are pulling together, we're harnessing capabilities in indigenous knowledge systems, biodiversity heritage, and biotechnology science. And this will impact on human health products, agricultural products for plant health, animal health, aquatic, industrial, mining, as well as environmental. We also, in that program on the biosciences arena, have resources devoted to what we call the South African HIV AIDS and Innovation Platform. At one stage, the department was heavily focused on looking for a vaccine. We were supporting research for a vaccine. But then we realized that actually unless we do something around treatment of HIV and AIDS, as well as prevention, we are not contributing optimally to South Africa's attempt to address the challenges of HIV and AIDS. And so we re-engineered our program of work on HIV and AIDS into what we call SHARP, the South African HIV and AIDS Research and Innovation Platform. We provide funding for novel, innovative, and pioneering research in the prevention and treatment of HIV and AIDS. We facilitate and encourage the commercialization of products arising from that research, and we manage the intellectual property and technology transfer around it. And members are at liberty at some stage, as your program for the new year is being designed, to look at getting presentations on progress that has been achieved in the SHARP program. There's also work that we are doing in a dedicated focus, generating a center of competence around that on tuberculosis, TB. We want to develop a globally compatible portfolio of projects with appropriate partners aligned with the vision of a TB center of competence. We have some very exciting work that is happening around using nanotechnology to design the casing, the membrane that will hold the TB drug, so that the drug will be released slowly into the body. And you won't have this problem where people are actually not maintaining their treatment regime because they forget to take their medication, or because nobody has oversight to see that they're taking their tablets. By using this, what they call a slow drug delivery system, because it's encased in this medium, it means that the drug diffuses slowly into the body. It will actually enhance completion by patients of their TB treatment. I said that we also have the space-based work here, and here we are actually utilizing some of the existing facilities that South Africa has in satellite space-based technology. Let me just introduce you to HOTEC. This is in the Grabouw area here in the Western Cape. It was established in the mid-1980s to support the RSA Air Force space program. So in other words, we found that South Africa actually had an old space program, which we were reigniting. The defense program at that time was canceled in the early 90s, and the civilian application, GreenSat, was canceled in 1995. HOTEC has been underutilized, therefore, and that's over the past 15 years, with the resultant degradation of capabilities, and I'd urge members to visit this HOTEC facility quite close by. Space activities were reduced to 2 microsatellites of work that was run at Stellenbosch University, SunSat and Sumbandila Sat. So that's what we were reduced to, was microsatellites. And some facilities are still there at HOTEC, which could be upgraded and used for future satellite applications. I've listed what they are: the satellite integration chamber, thermal vacuum chamber, mass property, anechoic chamber for EMC tests, 3D measurement and radiometric test and calibration equipment, and vibration and acoustic noise facilities. What we believe is that the HOTEC facility, which is currently known as the Institute for Software and Satellite Applications, is earmarked for transfer to our South African National Space Agency. The facility currently belongs to DNEL. So what we have to do in government is have a transfer of one asset to from one department to another department. And so the Department of Science and Technology is working with public enterprises, public works, and communications to ensure that we actually transfer the HOTEC facility. One last one in this program that I should mention, very exciting one, is the Square Kilometer Array project. This is an international mega science project. And must be noted, SKA is not a South African. We actually don't even have rights to that name, SKA. This name belongs to an international collective that includes 55 of the world's top research institutions: Oxford, Cambridge, Caltech, Berkeley, Cornell, IBM, Sony. And these exist across 19 countries. South Africa is only bidding for them to give us rights to build the square kilometer array here. This will entail construction of the world's largest, most sophisticated and technologically advanced astronomical facility. It won't only be constructed in South Africa. What is very important is that parts of it will be constructed in neighboring African countries. So it will truly be a mega science facility in Africa. Commissioning for this is in 2021, and what it will entail is 1.5 billion euros for the construction. Now you multiply by 12 and then you see how many billions that facility is going to bring in. Plus, there will be 150 million euros per annum that will be spent on the operations for a 50-year period. So when the DST talks about leveraging international resources, we've demonstrated with SALT, and now we're demonstrating with SKA that we can bring big science to South Africa and Africa and get other countries, convince other countries to spend their money here. South Africa and 8 African countries are shortlisted to host this SKA. Our competitors is Australia, as the members no doubt are aware. Some success stories. This work has attracted further international projects. And what is happening is it's actually impacting positively on what we call Afro-pessimism about whether South Africa and African countries can actually manage and have such large facilities built here. International collaboration in high-tech development, the CASPER one, this is part of knowledge economy, and the development of local expertise through industry engagement. So these are the things. Industry is actually benefiting because when this is constructed, that requires engineers, that requires even civil engineering work around the construction. And there's a picture of the first plastic radio astronomy dish developed by a South African contractor. We're very proud of this because what we found is our demonstration model, our prototype, this plastic one, has created excitement within the astronomy community abroad, even the people who are making decisions on SKA, because they see we've introduced new design features that they had not thought of. So that may give us an edge over Australia. We describe Meerkat, as the pathfinder to SKA, because we can't call it SKA, so we call it the pathfinder. And we've established a support base at Carnarvon. There's an on-site facility that is preparing. I might have said that wrong. Meerkat telescope to be a premier astronomical facility until SKA. The socio-economic benefits to date, Meerkat construction, there have been 592 local jobs for the previously disadvantaged. There's a total local contribution of 11.4 million to the economy. Local business and hospitality industry experienced a 30 to 50% increase in turnover during 2008-09. Outreach and education, we established a cyber lab at Carnarvon High School. Carnarvon High School. Sorry about that. Maths and science teacher training program and the private sector partnerships established for software. A third program in the DST, as I've indicated, is our international cooperation and resources. The objective is to develop and monitor bilateral and multilateral relationships and agreements in science and technology. Strengthen the national system of innovation and enable the flow of knowledge, capacity and resources into South Africa and neighboring countries. My colleagues have structured their sub-program to include multilaterals in Africa, international resources and bilateral cooperation. So they have chief directorates around these three sub-programs. Some of the achievements through the overseas bilateral cooperation, over 100 R&D projects in areas such as energy, space, ICT, and biotechnology were implemented. These are projects where not only South Africa is engaged, but a partner country at their cost is actually engaged, and we believe that we've been successful in that they spend more on their participation than we do. So we almost leverage a 1:10 effect with the bilateral. An international bilateral agreement served as the basis, we might add, for implementing the cooperation in the India-Brazil-South Africa framework and other flagship projects. So we were able to influence that relationship. We achieved 125 new joint projects, 4 in Africa, 35 across Asia and America, and 86 over Europe and the Gulf States. A total of 115 new bilateral projects were established in 2008-09. The DST acquired 338 million, I mentioned this, in international sources during 2008 financial year. We secured 30 million euros to address poverty, underdevelopment, and marginalization through the deployment of science and technology interventions. Those are the parameters. It must be science and technology. Received 3 million euro from Finland through the cooperation framework on innovation systems between Finland and South Africa. I've spoken about COFISA and that it has a very strongly a provincial flavor. Continued with financial support for the NEPAD flagship initiatives on science and technology. Program 4 is your human capital and knowledge systems. The focus is on development and implementation of national programs to produce knowledge. So there we look at publications, human capital, graduates coming through, and associated infrastructure, equipment, and public research services to sustain the national system of innovation. To deliver on this work, there are 3 sub-programs: human capital and science platforms, indigenous knowledge systems, and emerging research areas and infrastructure. Some of the highlights I've already mentioned. We brought in an additional 10 research chairs. Members may or may not be aware, these research chairs that we set up at the university, there was concern that as DST is gearing universities to do more research, Department of Education is attempting to improve the quality of the academic programs at the universities. And there may be this tension of teach or research. Right? And so what we've done through the SAATI research program is give them enough money to bring in additional expertise so that the research doesn't compromise the academic teaching programs at the universities. We started the postdoctoral program and supported 70 fellows, of which 40 were new enrollments into the program. I've mentioned this one on the 271 honors students in science, engineering, and technology. 85% were black students and 55% were females. We're monitoring this because we would actually like to see more females being brought into these programs. 2,500 learners participated in the DST, the schools that DST adopted from the Dinaledi group. 651 mathematics and science teachers were equipped with the necessary competencies to deliver the set curriculum. Sorry about that typo. 92 unemployed science graduates were placed in the internship program, and 124 into the National Youth Service Program. So that's not a double count. The 92 were interns, but the 124 were part of this broader government program on national youth services. 195,000 people participated in the 67 sites countrywide during National Science Week, of whom 89% were learners. This is a very key event that the DST runs every year, Science Week. It's to attract youngsters, get them excited about studying science and technology. The South African Strategic Research Infrastructure Forum to coordinate across government and science councils was launched. Successful establishment of a nanotech health, safety and environment research platform and a nanoscience center was put in place. This is something members may think of visiting, that center. Bachelor of Indigenous Knowledge Systems qualification has been registered with SAQWA. So when we talk about mainstreaming IKS into the current science system, this is one of them to get the qualification. Some of the infrastructure that the Program 4 manages is SANREN, which is the South African National Research Network. Here we are attempting to ensure that South African science councils and universities have access to high-speed bandwidth, and they have very easy and available connectivity. So we describe it as a high-bandwidth research network. There's high-speed data transmission, which relies on another facility which we put in place. called our Center for High Performance Computing. There's human capital development, so we bring in students and interns. There's connectivity for higher education institutions and councils. We facilitate remote operation of instruments, so your lab equipment and so on, having this high-speed connectivity, and it facilitates data sharing and collaboration. We about, I understand, 60% of the way with connecting all of these institutions onto SANREN. This SANREN will also give us connectivity with the rest of the world that will take us onto what we call, in that cloud that you see in the corner there, called the Giant, that has a point of contact in London. So that is the SANREN. The CHPC, which I said is the Center for High Performance Computing, we were really recipients of an IBM donation on the Blue Gene computer technology for high-speed processing. That's why we call it the Computer for High Performance Computing. It's a flagship project. If it can manipulate and process data at such high speed, it can do a lot of modeling for us on climate change, HIV and AIDS, food security issues, planning, grid computing, in the social sciences and other areas. And so what it gives us, science and technology collaboration with partners, provides us with highly sophisticated infrastructure, and also allows for human and regional capacity development. This is something we share with the rest of Africa. We don't just keep it for ourselves. And it was launched in October 2008, during the same year under review. Now we come to the fifth program, the Social Economic Partnership. And members can tear me to pieces. Yeah, I'm the DDG responsible for this one. To provide policy, strategy, and direction-setting support for R&D-led growth of value-adding industries, to enable government, industry, and the general public to understand and deal with the challenges of global change better, to provide evidence-based research on human and social dynamics of development, and to enhance government decision-making on science and technology, including R&D, as productive investment. We have three sub-programs, one on economic impact, one on social impact, and one on science and technology investment. The third one focuses primarily on statistical tools for information decision-making. Some of the highlights through our technology platforms for both social and economic impact, we, through the ICT R&D strategy, developed a geomatic platform with the CSIR to prepare what we call an advanced fire information service. South Africa is one of those countries that is vulnerable to outbreaks of fire during the dry season. Of course, in the Mpumalanga and northern KwaZulu-Natal, this year is in the summer months. And in the winter months, sorry. And in the Western Cape, that is in your summer months. And there have already been demonstrated progress in helping provinces do their planning and their early warning systems around fire, the threats of fire. Initiated a larger scale demonstration of a wireless mesh network as part of investigations on broadband connectivity. A problem that this government faces is that whilst it might get it right to give affordable internet connectivity to our urbanized settlements, when it comes to remote setting, we can't seem to get the syntax and all of those institutions to give connectivity to rural populations. This wireless mesh network is actually looking at a more affordable, lower cost, and easily a technology that is easy to assimilate in those rural settings. And we are rolling this out in three provinces at the moment. There's a joint DST Water Affairs project on innovative alternative technologies for water supply and access. Again, we find in the urban settings, communities can get access to water, but once you get to your rural settings, a large proportion of the South African population is still sitting without clean and safe drinking water. We have to introduce safe options and affordable technology options for giving these communities access to water and sanitation. So to do some of these things, we set up memoranda of understanding with partner departments like Water Affairs and so on. And we've, in this past year, concluded six of these agreements with national departments. developed an automated system for collecting data on public expenditure on science and technology activities. This we consider as a very important achievement. We now have government departments reporting to through the Treasury process on what they're spending on science, technology, and innovation activities. Members are aware that there's perhaps only one province that can boast it as a Department of Science and Technology. And what we believe is we have to work with provinces and national governments to even at the beginning classify what's a science and technology activity, and then to ensure that they start increasing their investments. Report on publicly financed scientific and technology activities, a report on this, has just been completed. We presented it to our minister, and we will be going to Cabinet and then coming to the parliamentary committee with that report. This program doesn't simply look at what is happening on the social front and what's happening in government on investments in science and technology, but we're also gearing up for impacting on the economy in the short to medium term. And what has happened is industry, science councils, and universities have been mobilized around putting in place the building blocks to develop a titanium industry. And yeah, we are encouraged by the fact that South Africa possesses the second largest reserve of unbeneficiated titanium dioxide. We also recognize that this is part of the broader government's strategy on beneficiation led by the Department of Mineral Resources. So you can see from the ore from which we get titanium, ilmenite, where it gets sold at 29 US cents a kg, right up to the final beneficiated product, which could either be titanium ingots sold at 20 US dollars, not cents now, we move from cents to the dollars, to milled products, so this is your bars and so on, at 50 US dollars. We hope that in a few years, this is what we will be producing. So instead of dig it up and ship it out the raw ore, we're actually developing capabilities to process and manufacture. A big objective is this production of the titanium powder. It's not as much as a mill product, but we believe that in order to do this, we will be convincing European aerospace markets like Airbus and Boeing that we can produce the titanium powder to aerospace grade. That is the highest quality. And we already have a few patents lined up. So it is not an idle boast. It is something that we are actually working on. This is how we are going to get there. The DST has developed this concept around the Center of Competence model for mobilizing and marshalling the work of our research and technology developers. So we have, yeah, led by the CSIR, one pillar on titanium metal production. Mintec is involved, University of Pretoria, Nexa, and a private company, Thermtron. On the powder metallurgy, again led by CSIR, there's cooperation with a Japanese company, University of Limpopo, WITS, Stellenbosch, Mintec, Central University of Technology, and the National Laser Center. On investment casting of titanium, so showing that we're not only working on the powder and those processing, but we're working on machining and so on as well. We've got CSIR, UCT, and University of Stellenbosch. Machining of titanium is again Stellenbosch, University of Johannesburg, UCT, and CSIR. Joining of titanium, there's capabilities. We've put infrastructure and reporting research at the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University and the National Laser Center. The forming of titanium is an ambition that we have for later stages. What we call cross-cutting physical metallurgy of titanium capacity has been mobilized at UP, UCT, and University of KwaZulu-Natal. Simulation and modeling, some of the strongest capabilities reside at University of Limpopo. We've got CSIR involved, we've got University of KwaZulu-Natal and UCT involved. And then we use the lab at all of these institutions. This is what is going to take us towards an industrialization and commercialization path for the country. We also, as a department, have a commitment to supporting the rest of government in achieving the tech localization, the technology localization ambition of what is called the Competitive Supplier Development Program. Now, the Competitive Supplier Development Program is not a DST program. In fact, it's a DPE program, public enterprises. They are utilizing the billions, 15 to 20 billions worth of procurement that Eskom and Transnet will be making over the next 20 or 25 years. And they have argued that Eskom and Transnet must assist to ensure that local South African companies start to benefit from some of that procurement. Now, public enterprises can use its muscle on those state-owned enterprises. But the companies, the small ones, the small engineering companies that must get locked into those, they need the support of DTI and DST, because they must develop their technology capabilities to become a player. In terms of the work we've done in partnership with these other departments, we finalized a technology benchmarking tool with UNIDO. There's 100 companies, South African companies in the foundry industry that we have already benchmarked. We've generated industry overview studies on the foundry and the nuclear. They almost completed. In terms of the process steps that DPE is running with Eskom and Transnet, different hubs have been formed, and a very new one has been set up. It's called Transformers and Hubs, what Motors Hub. What has been identified is, yes, space here for South African engineering companies to get contracts. 10 companies have been identified in another area for benchmarking and what we call technology assistance packages, and this is in the decoder manufacturing industry. Members are no doubt aware that separately Department of Communications is working with ICASA and others to deal with the whole thing of what they call sets of boxes, but we ordinary South Africans call decoders, and we believe that local companies must be broke in to do this manufacturing. As part of Transnet, a local OEM has been identified for manufacturing haulage trucks. On the national nuclear front, we got quite a start about 2 or so years ago when we discovered South Africa does have nuclear ambitions. The government hasn't yet made up its mind and signed off on a deal on those nuclear ambitions. But when we do, South African manufacturing industry must be able to play in the nuclear manufacturing space. We discovered that no South African company would be allowed to manufacture because it doesn't have this certification, this accreditation. They call it ASME 3, the ASME 3 stamp. Through the standards bodies, you get things like ISO 9001, you know, the standards that ISO standards that SABS issues and so on. In the nuclear industry, this ASME 3 accreditation you need. And you only get it through United States framework. The DST has supported the upgrading of facilities at Pelindaba to set up a facility where training can happen for companies so that they get this ASME 3 accreditation. We've also had engagements with Westinghouse and Areva on just trying to understand what would happen if they were to get a contract with the South African government for a nuclear plant, and what kind of local industries would spin out of that. So no deals have been struck, we're just doing intelligence gathering on that. Another area that we hope to, that we have been succeeding in terms of economic development, relates to a DTI-led industrial initiative called the Fluorochemicals Expansion Initiative, the FAI initiative. And here we note that South Africa, again, has large deposits of what is called fluorspar. And in actual fact, one of the reserves where this fluorspar is mined has the richest grade fluorspar. Now this fluorspar plays a key role in a number of areas, from the nuclear front, even to products which we buy in terms of non-stick frying pans. So in other words, when we buy this stuff, we should actually have been manufacturing it here in South Africa with our rich reserves. And to mobilize the research community and industry, we have a combination of expertise in KwaZulu-Natal on fluorochemicals, the University of KwaZulu-Natal, the University of Pretoria, as well as Nexa and a subsidiary of Nexa called Talchem. The DST has set up research chairs at these two universities. With the research chair approach, the university is forced to take on students. In other words, they don't just get a research grant because of their interest in research, but with being the research chair model, they must take students, and if they stop taking students on, then we actually cancel. They're in breach of the contract. And there's expertise at University of KwaZulu-Natal on separations technology and organic chemistry, on UP, University of Pretoria, fluoropolymers and elastomers, fluoro material science, high temperature technologies, and fluorochemical patents. They hold quite a few fluorochemical patents. Nexar, of course, is one of the only institutions in South Africa where you can work with such dangerous materials. So in other words, you can't work with this in any setting. And so UP and KwaZulu-Natal actually have to come and do some of their research at Telangaba. So there they have general fluorochemical R&D capabilities, hydrogen fluoride and fluorine technology, and inorganic fluoride. I understand that if you've heard about what happens when acid falls on you, you won't be around to tell the tale if you work in the fluorine environment. That's how dangerous it is. But it's a big money spinner in industrial terms. I'm now going to hand over to my colleague to talk you through our report on the financial performance of the department, Malekolwane Malapane.
Thank you, Marjorie. And thank you, everybody. This graph tells us the budget that we have received so far, beginning from 2006 and 2007, then going up to 2008 and 2009, and during 2008 and 2009 we have received 3.7 billion, and the 2009 and 2010 we have received 4.2 billion, and then the rest of the financial year have not yet been determined, because we have sent out our bid, and the MTF for 2010 has not yet been confirmed. And the blue is, and I wonder if everybody can see this. The blue on the graph, the blue bar, is an indication of how much we have received, and then the bright green is the actual expenditure. So for the 2008 and 2009, our expenditure performance stands at 99.5%, and we didn't use 0.5% of the appropriated funds given to us by Parliament. And this pie chart really indicates the amount of money allocated to our various programs that the DDG has already alluded to. We have five programs within the department, and I will start with the fifth program, because it's at the top, which is the socio-economic partnership. They had a 30% slice of the budget, and we have corporate services standing at 3%. Then we have R&D at 23%. Then we have international cooperation and resources that got 4%. Then we have human capital and knowledge system with 40% share of the budget. And below or above the percentages, we've already indicated the amount of money that went to the various programs. And then on this slide, we show performance per program for the 2008-09 financial year. And as we can see, we have all performed well above average, if I may say it, for all the programs, because the performance is all in the upper 90s. Thank you.
Madam Chairperson and members of the committee, I did indicate that we also consider it our job to read the system, study the system to see what's the expenditure on R&D, what's the expenditure on science and technology, so that we can better inform government to take decisions. And so we run every year what we call our R&D surveys, and we also now recently have been doing innovation surveys and so on. It's out of doing that work on measuring the R&D that we did pitch to Cabinet that we're not just presenting this information in terms of spending that's happening, but we believe that by government committing to an increased spend on R&D, you'll be mobilizing industry, you'll be catalyzing the productivity of the economy. And we drew correlations in terms of levels of R&D spending in the developed world as well as in developing countries. And in 2004, an objective was set that by 2008, South Africa will have achieved an R&D ratio to GDP that is at 1%. And we set that ambition. We believe the last report showed that we were close to it. And that was the R&D survey for 2006. And now, 6-7. We should now be getting the R&D report for 2007-8. I must caution, there's always a delay, a lag, because you're looking back at historical figures, what was spent there. We don't know what will be spent in 2009, so we can always only act on the past survey. We are very close, as you can see to this, this graph that shows that the expenditure has been increasing, and we already, with this little X over here, we're showing that that's the average that you get in OECD countries. We are hoping that we can convince the authorities that we should by 2020 go to a 2% of GDP. There's no decision on that, but we hope that the committee members are going to be staunch allies with us in making this kind of case. And then I did indicate that we'd be talking about the demographics, the HR issues inside DS, internal to DST, and we see that we've got 78% as black, we've got 10% as white, 6% as colored, and 6% as Indian. On that note, Madam Chairperson, I want to conclude, but then I want to flag that I do have slides on the Science Council, but I expect you will be having them here, so I think we could stop just on the DST one. So the concluding remarks. Overall, we believe that our department has achieved and met most of its performance targets. Human capital development, we would like the committee members to note, has been given high priority, and innovation instruments have been put in place. This is the TIA, Technology Innovation Agency, and those centers of competence like titanium and fluorochemicals. We've established the Space Agency. We have now the IPR Act, the TIA Act, and the Space Agency Act. We believe there's been strong financial performance, and we also have strong oversight over the performance reporting by the entities that report to the Department of Science and Technology. Thank you, Madam Chairperson and committee members.
Thank you, Deputy Director General. You know, I'm afraid, I'm just in stage of pandemic. Really, I'm afraid to pronounce your surname.
Pius.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Because I'm very sensitive towards my surname. If you don't pronounce my surname correctly, before I open to the members to interact with the report, like I indicated that firstly, you know, I like the energy, you know, the way you were presenting, you know, your energy. But if one was listening, you know, everything is like it's going smooth. You know, there are no challenges of which as a human being really raise some concerns, you know, because out of your presentation, what I could picked up as a challenge, it was when you talked about the broadband, you know, when you the issue of the rural areas, the remote areas and all that. But throughout your presentation, it seems to me, you know, there are no lot of challenges, but to me it's a concern. But we'll check when members interact with your annual report that really what you are giving us is what we should. Is it the true reflection of what is happening on the ground? And also maybe to thank the
CFO,
yeah, for her presentation. It was very short, but we are going to interact. I'm just going to open for the members to interact with the report. Honorable Fiber, Honorable De Villiers, Honorable Hasmene, and Mashuti. In that sequence.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to show you why I'm saying that that it's nice for us now hearing about all these things, but it's actually useless for us if the political heads are not here, and I will quickly explain why. On carte blanche about this energy cell carve-out, was on carte blanche. There are a lot of questions raised. I know it's now private partnership type thing that they're going to run because of Toyota, Volvo and all these guys that are actually in the car market where we are actually not competitive. There was a whole debate on carte blanche on that, so I'm not even going into that. But I would like to tell you quickly on the, and this is why I want the politicians here, the ministers and the DG. On the SKA Pathfinders Meerkat, you know, this is in my province, and that's why I'm here to represent my province. They need a piece of land where there's no radioactivity to put up these satellites. Now, that is northwest of Priska. There's a place called Alkanpan. Now, I don't know if you know Priska, but Priska used to be where they used to mine. And the miners and all these people lost their jobs. So there is a testing facility where about 300 people work called Alkanpan. Now Alkanpan is where all these overseas people come and test weapons. Now it's across the area of about 80 kilometers where they shoot cannons like the G5 cannon and from Sri Lanka, China, everyone is testing their weapons there because it's the only airspace. They shoot it up 50 kilometers. You're not allowed to fly in that area. And where this 300 people are working, I know for sure now, we must talk, and we are thinking this is 300 people in the Northern Cape in Priska. And I'm talking from the poorest of the poor till a few of the, I would say, senior members that work there. But most of the people are the people that live in townships that work at Alkanpan. Now, they need to have a radio silence area in that area for this to happen. Now, it's nice to say we're going to create this international thing for South Africa because it's between us and Australia. But what we don't know as a committee is that 300 people will lose their jobs in Priska. For 5 or 6 people to permanently, eventually at the end of the day, look at this station type of thing. So we have to weigh up these things. This is things that we don't, that the committee don't know. And are we going to tell 300 people that's got families at the end of the day? You know, this type of things, this is what I don't see in the report. You see all the nice things. And these are questions which I would like to ask for the deputy minister, because I know they've already started talking to these people, asking them, can't they work on other places, etc. And there's apparently no other place. So these type of questions I would like to raise. It's not here. but it's the reality if this goes on. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question goes around the expenditure of the department. Now, on page 27 of the document, table 3, there's a departmental expenditure and the variance is also there. There's a variance of 18.247 million. Due to that presentation this morning, the department are telling me this morning that all the funds has been spent. Now, is the document wrong, or what is the situation between my understanding of the presentation and the document? And also on page 28, transfers of payments to the different entities, the subsidies and so on. I calculated that under the first one, the National Research Foundation, there's 387 million underspent, and so you can go for the others also on that side. Then on page 36, the SKA, under the actual performance, a comprehensive funding plan and the long-term innovation program has not been developed due to the human resource constraints. Now, in the other document, or in the other sections of the document, I don't pick up the human constraints further. What is the situation in the department about that situation? And due also to the presentation here, I've got the information about the SKA different as stated here in this document on page 30. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. And thanks to the DCG who has just made the presentation on the annual report. Not much has been said by the department about the involvement, the development and empowerment of communities as far as science, tech, and technology activities or projects is concerned. And the next question will be on, the issue of the funds that have been leveraged from other countries, such as Finland. How does the department spend or disperse these funds in ensuring that it achieves its core function? And the issue of graduates who don't find jobs after completing their studies is really puzzling, because we were thinking that there's a shortage of skills as far as science and technology skills are concerned. This is for the first time that I hear that there are graduates that are roaming around not having jobs here. And what kinds of interventions or assistance is provided by the, besides the intense program that we have talked about? How does the department assist the graduates to find proper jobs? And also, in ensuring that we deploy them to those departments who are having experiencing problems as far as this is concerned. A number of joint science and technology project activities between the DST and other departments has been trying to locate this project. What kinds of projects are you referring to? Can you please elaborate on that? And in terms of this South African HIV and AIDS and innovation platform, what kind of relationship are you having with the health department or its research unit in ensuring that you work together to do this kind of work together, also with TB program that you are having? And I think I want to also to welcome the invite for the committee to visit some of these areas that have been mentioned here, Chairperson. and by the department, we definitely have to visit them and go and see for ourselves how do they look like. And lastly, it's about the, you have mentioned biodiesel, biofuel, and all those kind of things. There's also something that has also been talked about, the genetically modified foods. What role does the department play in as far as that issue is concerned? I will stop there for now.
Thanks, sir. My question is there any research work done to help improve the capacity of South Africans in determining a skills development need and or audit need as well as the career development need in the area of science and technology? My second question, Chair, is has any work been done by the CETA State Information Technology Agency to help coordinate and improve state information and technology systems? What monitoring and evaluation strategies are in place to ensure quality service delivery in science and technology? Thanks.
Chairperson, well, it was a very lengthy strategic presentation by the DTG, and to some extent, I nearly no look at it in another angle to say that it seems the DTG is presenting a business proposal to the committee. But as I go on and listen to the DTG, I find out there is a lot of accountability that the department is trying to actually is accounting on into this committee. My question, Chairperson, like I said, there are few things that I wanted to raise with the department. One is that, you know, I wanted to check with the department, the intervention of department to strengthen science and technology in the foundation, in the community, like in a primary school and secondary school. Because, you know, the document is very silent about it. It just makes reference that there is, for sure, schools called Tena Lady, but we are not actually sure. I know that maybe another certain department or ministry in the department will be able to, in education, will be able to speak in detail about the schools. But I wanted to check on the scientific intervention to assist so that we begin to build our scientists as far as the primary school and secondary school. And the other question is on the, I had to talk about the report speaks, no, very small about the decoder, the STBs. Then with reference to the set of boxes that STBs or decoded, as you said in your report, that convert the analog signals to digital signal. What is the role of the Department of Science and Technology in this regard? I wanted to check with the department if there is anything that they are doing or the intervention that they are making in that regard. And it is alleged DDG that the STBs shall be sourced primarily from South African manufacturers. So to what extent has this been done? I also want to check with the department if it's minimal or maximal or what they do to that. And maybe, Chair, I would ask other question in the next round.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Maybe before I give over to the DG to answer, I would just want to add something. Under selected indicators and actual performance, you know, one gets the figures, but you don't get really, if you are saying for 2006 or 2007, this is what the target of 130 is, you know, this is what you have achieved. There's no indication of what was your initial target, you know, you compare these figures against what, so that we can, maybe if one can get clarity around that, that what were the actual targets that we, if we have said that we have achieved, we should be in a position to see the difference. If we have said that
we underachieved, you know. Mm-hmm. We should also be in a position to see the difference. And the other thing is under the receipts, the public entities that report to the Department of Science and Technology. Most of the departmental receipts are transferred to the entities. In view of the fact that 85% of department allocation is transferred to these entities, I just want to check with the department what mechanisms are there to monitor and evaluate performance of these entities, and how often do you meet with these entities, you know, and do the public entities submit reports to the department in terms of the PSMA? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to distribute some of the questions with my colleague, some on the finance, and one Malek Owane will actually answer.
So the questions on finance, Malek Owane will deal with. I'll start with the opening question in terms of the car. The question wasn't around the car. It was really around SKA and the Alcan Fund test range facility and the communities that will actually be affected. There has been substantial public hearings and discussions around this, and I believe the DSC has some plans around how you can stimulate other types of economic activity. So what I recommend is that there is a presentation by the DSC on the SKA work and how it affects the communities. We've also designed a special program that we call Collateral Benefits, where we believe that where we build science facilities like an astronomy observation platform, the communities who live around it must actually benefit. South Africa as a government can't plow millions or billions into that facility, and you've got poor communities that live in the surrounding areas. So I think a fuller presentation is warranted in terms of the what we understand by the collateral benefits and other work that is happening around that one. So we will definitely follow up. We'll have a response document as well as look for an appropriate time on the agenda of the committee to respond to that issue. And I'll also alert the DM that, you know, this is a question that our political principals must also respond to. I leave the finance to Malek Owane and Joyner at a later stage, but staying with the other question on the square kilometre array and the observation that there were human resource constraints. What we were actually referring to was internal to the DSC, not the work that's actually happening around Meerkat. There was a responsibility that DSC had to prepare a long-term funding plan to go to Treasury around Meerkat and the SKA issues. And the DSC did not progress with the development of that because internal to the DSC we had human resource constraints. So what we are indicating is that this will be on the table for this current year, which we will report on. That was that one. Then the issue of the NRF understanding, I will take that one, because that's not related to internal, to the DSC. What I must appeal to the committee members to take note of is that the NRF's year of transferring funds does not coincide with the government's financial year. They run their allocations of grants to the academic calendar year. So you will usually find at year end, when our financial year ends, that they are sitting with funding that must be deployed into the universities for that particular academic year. We've had discussions with Treasury, and there's been agreement that they understand the NRF is an exception. There were instances where other institutions had small surpluses. Malek Owane will bear me out on this, but they were able to explain that it was around a piece of equipment that had been ordered and it was still under negotiation. Then the question around community engagement. and our reporting in terms of what projects are happening. There is a wealth of information, but not captured in this presentation, nor captured fully or extensively in the report. We have agro-processing initiatives across the country, essential oils projects, where we go from both the agronomy of working with farmers in cooperatives to grow high-value plants from which you can extract oils that are used in the perfume industry, they are used in the cosmetics industry, and so on. And this is when you hear DSC talking about from farmer to farmer. It's not that we're turning farmers into guys with PhDs. What we are saying is agricultural produce must now start to find a market in the pharmaceutical environment. Skin care products, hair care, health care products, and so on. We have about close to 3,000 households benefiting from the community-based work. It's not just restricted to the agro-processing and essential oils and medicinal plants using indigenous knowledge and so on. It even extends to aquaculture, where we have right now in the Western Cape a group, just by way of example, a farmers cooperative. With the work the DSC did with them and the University of Stellenbosch, they have got a contract with Woolworths for 250 tons of trout a year. They were not in the aquaculture business before DSC started. They now have a contract with Woolworths, and they are supplying in. So, in other words, it's a cage net aquaculture, low-cost technology, and the DSC stays with these farming communities until they've acquired the skills and they've even got business contracts. So I think we do owe you to come and share with you some of these community-based projects. We will set up a time when we can do that. Just by way of another example, when we were challenged in terms of the poor sanitation in the schools, the deputy ministers of DST and other water and so on, water affairs, got together and said, what can we do by way of cheap technologies? We went into the Eastern Cape region where we found that according to provincial reports from departments of education, Eastern Cape was sitting with the worst report on infrastructure in schools and particularly as it relates to sanitation. Eastern Cape is also one of the provinces where the outbreaks of cholera are the worst. So what we did is we targeted areas that are cholera prone and where apparently these schools, the children, do not have a toilet to use. There are toilets, but not one to use. They go the whole day without having access to a toilet or clean drinking water. We could not construct a DSC. It's not our business to construct toilets. But what we recognize is the problem is there's a business activity that hasn't started in the Eastern Cape, and that is about servicing some of the pit latrine toilet systems. And what we did is we spent money on providing the technology to small black-owned companies, the technology and the training. They started to work through these schools. 700 schools were cleaned up by the DST support. And then other districts close by started to look at saying they were prepared to even pay for it themselves. So we do take community work very, very seriously, and this is something we can present on much more fully at a later stage. The question around the cooperation with Finland and how we actually disperse that funding. We must bear in mind that when you enter an agreement with a foreign country, they have what they call, they come to the table with their sets of priorities, and then South Africa sits down with our sets of priorities. And in the main, countries that are foreign donors supporting work we are doing want to promote the knowledge about how to solve situations. They very seldom actually spend money on equipment or spend money on hard goods or services. So what we have with Finland is a work that is around research, and it's also facilitative work to promote the development of regional innovation systems. So when they say they're promoting the setup, and they do facilitative work. They pay for workshops. They pay for papers to be presented that argue the case of why the provincial governments should sit down the technology managers in each department and share thinking and planning around what is the best way to advance innovation and technology development at the regional level. So it's more on the facilitative side. They've provided funding in three provinces. So they even choose which provinces they want to work for. I'm sure committee members are aware that donors choose provinces. If you look at the Eastern Cape, you'd see that's where predominantly most of the German funding goes. You see also even the Finnish funding goes. So we as DST, what we do is if they choose Eastern Cape and Western Cape, then we say from our side we're funding the participation of Limpopo and Northwest and so on. And this is what we've done with science center development work that we're doing currently in the Northwest province and so on. Chairperson, I hope you noted I had to throw in Northwest there. But there is a lot of work we're doing with the Northwest province. The question about the graduates looking for jobs and the skill shortages, it is true. It is absolutely accurate. There are shortages of engineering and science and technology capabilities in particular fields. We have instruments in place. The research chair is one where I said that's where we're trying to grow the numbers by forcing the universities that they will not get our research grant unless they're prepared to take students in. But there are genuinely instances where young black graduates coming from specific universities struggle to get a job. If you're coming from UCT with a science degree, you are more likely to get a job immediately you step out of that university than if you are a young black graduate and you're coming out of Limpopo or Fort Hare or whatever the case is. And it's in this regard that the DST has been sensitive and we've mobilized. And we said if we give them an internship at our science council, we have the power to do that, then at least you see industry looking with a different set of eyes. Oh, you've worked at the CSIR. They start to forget that you come from Limpopo University or Northwest or, well, not so much Northwest, but Fort Hare and so on. So it's different, let's say different tactics to try and ensure that not only we're growing the researchers, but we're also ensuring that they find work. The DST joint initiative, we have a bilateral agreement with Department of Water Affairs, and I think I've given a sense that there's considerable work that's in our annual work program with them on water. The major focus is on access to water by rural communities, not so much in the urban setting. And then we have a relationship with Department of Energy, and here we jointly fund what is called SANERI, the South African National Energy Research Institution. There's a new name, I think, that it's acquiring, which is SANEDI, so that there's more development and not too much on the research side. But through that, we fund a whole range of initiatives on renewables. There is work that we are supporting with them on what we call a carbon capture atlas. There's a new technology that is being advocated globally for carbon capture and storage facilities every time you build a coal-fired power plant. So in other words, you inject the carbon dioxide gases into the earth, deep into the earth. The DST is worried about that, because what we are saying is you can't just inject that into any geomorphological structure. It has to be very stable. And so we rather support work to do this atlas that will advise the energy decision makers, power plant builders, construction, that they can only do this carbon capture and storage in specific regions in South Africa. And we have an MOA with Department of Housing, Human Settlements. We know that, number one, they're having the Red Book reviewed. They're placing a large part of that responsibility with DST. We also know that with Human Settlements, the subsidy that they give for RTP houses and low-cost houses does not allow poor households to afford a solar geyser. It doesn't afford them the ability to have feeling sometimes. So what we are doing is we are demonstrating, and there's about 1,000 or so houses that are under construction where we are demonstrating that if you put that solar geyser and if you take the following measures in the design of that house, in the construction of that house, you will actually be lowering the cost in the long term for the household in terms of access to electricity, in terms of access to water, and so on. And then hopefully that will influence the policy that Department of Human Settlements takes in terms of what is the size of that subsidy. Give the people a little more on the subsidy so they can get a solar geyser. So in other words, we may be pushing the technology, but in the long term it's going to impact on the quality of life of people. Chairperson, I could expand on this, but I think what would be better is if we provide a list with the detail to you, if we forward that in writing to respond to that question on the partnerships with other government departments. We are very definitely working with Department of Health on SHARP, on the HIV and AIDS, as well as the TB. In fact, there was it took a while to settle that relationship because we did not want to be encroaching upon the work area of Department of Health. So there's agreement that we don't administer or support clinical trials because that is so highly regulated that Department of Health must have full responsibility around that. So we have agreement on where does DST's work begin and where does their work begin and how the two efforts complement each other. The R&D capacity of South Africa, the skills needs in science and technology. I think I've answered some of those questions to some extent in saying we work with the universities to grow more researchers, provide funds for bursaries and so on. And then the CITA work, is that the State Information Technology Agency? Is that the one we're talking about?
Mm.
Yes. Now, we work with CITA in what is called a government cluster on ISAD, Information Society and Development. And one of the things we're cooperating with them on is a plan on how we need to migrate government to open source software standards. So that is work that is in the starting stages. Okay. And then the intervention to strengthen the foundation teaching. That program 4 that deals with human capital has an entire section that just looks at youth into science. And it's through those mechanisms that not only do we have the Science Week, which is focused on the schooling environment, it encourages participation so that we excite these young children into looking at science as a possible career space one day. But over and above that, with these dinner lady schools, the ones we've adopted for integration into our work, we're looking at the science, engineering, and technology curriculum, and I think there was a point where I made where I said that we're even working with those teachers in assisting them to familiarize themselves with the curriculum as well as the use of tools, laboratories, and so on to make sure that they are prepared. So we sat down with Department of Education and we outlined how we could cooperate with them because we can't do their work, their mandate. And the decision we've reached is ours will always be extracurricular. So over and above what Department of Education is doing, we have training for teachers outside of school hours. We have support for youngsters outside of school hours. There's some exciting work that is happening around using IT, giving these children access to better quality teaching through video conferencing, through the internet, and so on. So the foundation, let's say, area, foundation skills, we fully appreciate how important that is in terms of building the next generation of scientists. So we could send you a report on what is the work that DST is doing, all of the work that we're doing in that area. On the set-top box question, Department of Communications has helped identify about 10 South African companies that could engage in this manufacturing at different levels. At one level, a company is described as an OEM if it manufactures the whole box itself. and it has design authority over that product. There are only 4 South African companies of those 10 who could do that. So they are most likely in the running to get awarded that contract by the South African government, right? And the other 6 are what we call tier 2 and tier 3 suppliers. They may get subcontracts from these 4 bigger companies. And the DST is working at looking at how do we empower and upgrade the manufacturing capability of those 6 tier 2 and tier 3 companies so they can also participate. The DST is in a fortunate position that we have immediate and direct access to science councils, to universities, so we can actually mobilize training and support for them. And then on the point that you raised, Chairperson, on those figures, the original commitments and then an indication of whether we have exceeded, met, or not met our target. I think David is prepared to give you a few answers on those. David?
The amount that we're searching is that 0.05.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just in terms of the selected indicators, Chairperson. Yeah, this is the format that we're using currently, which only covers the 3 years that we have. And if there is a need to have additional information for the years before the 3 years, we could make that available.
Chairperson, on the mechanics, we do meet on a quarterly basis with science councils. They provide us with quarterly reports. We analyze those reports. We find where the shortcomings are. And so in terms of PMA compliance, I can't boast that we're the best performing department, but we are trying very hard on that score. And when I mentioned that we've done a review of the performance of the science council and we share that report with you, then David will be coming along in the near future. And that is of the science council. I think if you'll allow me just for Malekhoane to respond to some of the financial questions, and then...
Thank you, Mazwe, and thank you, Chair. On the issue of the expenditure, it was mentioned that we said that we expended 99.5 of our budget. Yes, it's true, we did that, because if you take the 18 million that was not expended, that represents 0.5% of the budget.
Honourable Members, is there any follow-up questions? Honourable Hasmene, Honourable Blake, just for follow-up for now, then I'll...
follow-up? Okay, it's just to say that Chairperson, the DDG has been trying to draw our attention to the fact that we need to commend the department for the good work it has done as far as its delivery of services, and also ensuring that the department has managed to get an unqualified audit opinion. I think you'll communicate that to the minister, that we as a committee, we really appreciate that. And we know that the department will maintain this data. Thanks.
On the knowledge schools, I don't know what page is it here. I understand the response of the PTG and the attempt to assist in improving science and technology at the lower level by assisting and adopting those schools. So Chairperson, my frustration is that I have carefully looked into that. Hence, I said the follow up on the. I wanted to actually to supplement to say the reason why majority of graduates sometimes they are unemployed. It is because if you look at the manner in which the department is supporting the science and technology at the lowest level, it is not, they are not pumping money to assist there at the lowest level. You can see even throughout this document, Chairperson, there are bigger projects here, projects that can cost millions of rands. But what does that project do? It goes to the hands of few people or companies that will go in and assist, and they get sponsorship, the universities. But what about the primary schools and the secondary schools? I have seen, Chairperson, with an example in one district in our province, in the Northwest Province. Some of the schools which are said to be the Naledi schools have extremely dilapidated buildings and a very poor science laboratory. But it's a school is chosen as the Naledi. But because, you know, when I was investigating, Chairperson, why the school has been chosen the Naledi school, you will see that at a particular year, the poor school have at least produced good results. On the basis of what the school have produced, they just look at the results. Oh, there's a good school, and even not going down and look at the school is declared the Naledi. But if you go down there, at this point, the school is not even performing. It's the next school, which is not the Naledi, is doing far better than the school that is declared the Naledi school. So it is that reason I look at another report, Chairperson, in the system, that majority of schools which were declared the Naledi school are now being taken out of the system, putting new schools as the Naledi school. I'm just saying, but how do we assist? What are we doing? Because from what I'm saying, Chairperson, is that schools are not chosen because department wants to build. It goes down and build a Naledi school and support it throughout in the science school. They just have the list. I've got a list of schools here, some of the schools. They're just the Naledi schools by name and maybe by choice of giving at a particular good result. But if you look at the structures, the infrastructure there, and the systems, they are absolutely not the Naledi school. But what I'm trying to say, but why don't the department, they still go back, give us a very good intervention strategies to say, but this is how we want to build up scientists from this level and commit the bulk of the money towards them. And the one point is on the SHAP, the SHAP program, that of HIV and AIDS research. I wanted to check with the department. Is there any way where the department will intertwine the indigenous knowledge system in medicine and your research department or research council, or the very indigenous knowledge system be sponsored so that they improve their system, their research as well into indigenous medicine to assist preventing or reducing the pandemic of HIV in this country.
Thank you, Honorable Plati. Before I get to the DDG, maybe to respond, I would just like to indicate that, as earlier on I indicated, that we are from provinces, we represent provinces, and when we do our input, we'll be comparing what is actually happening on the ground and against what you are saying at the national level. If I have to come in, I just want to check, you know, is the worrying factor, as you have indicated, that when we, the unemployed graduates, you know, this and that, you know, graduates from the former Ote University against, when you take it against the UCT, you know, the issue of employing the graduates, you know, to me is a worrying factor, that really we need the department to give us more details. Why are you saying that the resources is the issue? You know, these institutions are not getting the same, you know, same assistance for to get better qualities from all the institutions. And also, I just want to say something on the issue of the National Science Week. You know, it's a worrying factor that we've got this program,
but we don't really get the impact that it makes, you know. Like when we do have this National Week, National Science Week, but when you go there and interact, who are the people who are getting the opportunity to go there, you know, like when they're having expo. You know, the people, the children from the rural, remote areas, they don't even get access, you know, to this expo. Even the farm schools, how do we take them on board? You talk about training, how do we take on board the teachers, you know, from remote areas, from the farm schools, because always the ones who are left behind, but when we talk, we are talking about general, that we are taking teachers for training, but in the actual fact that, you know, the few ones who've got an opportunity because he's staying in an urban area or he is from the former model school, then they are the only ones that benefit from this project. And the other thing that I would just have, I was invited last year to where the children were awarded with the awards for the Denel project, that they got this extra class of, you know, to teach children on science. When we interviewed, only the children from the urban areas benefited from this project. You ask yourself, because you are in Dr. Kenneth Gowda region, there are farm schools. Why don't they benefit if it's for everybody and if it is for previously disadvantaged? Is it our when are we talking about previously disadvantaged? Are we only referring to those that who are in our reach, but those who are far, who are not included in those programs? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I may not do full justice to some of the questions, but I'm sure we can follow up with the rest of the answers. I must point out, with all due respect, that the DST has a very small budget compared to the budget of Department of Education. I explained that when we were looking at what we do with the schools, we already had a Department of Education that had planned this dinner lady concept. And whilst we had a plan that was under development for recognizing maths and science schools and focusing our attention on those good performing maths and science schools, what we agreed, being part of the government collective, is that we were going to support the dinner lady concept. And I cannot answer for the effectiveness with which the Department of Education has executed its implementation duties on dinner lady. But to give effect to what we wanted to do to address the issue of the maths and science, with our limited budget, we then designed an approach of adopting dinner lady schools to the extent that we could commit, to which our budget would allow us. And so this is why when we describe our engagement with dinner lady, we talk about the adoption of some of the dinner lady schools. We don't have enough resources for all of them. Now, why we are doing that is not at all because it's in our mandate. It's not in our mandate. Our mandate is supposed to support research activity with the Department of Science and Technology. But we realized a long time ago that we're not going to get the new generation of scientists until we help address the problem of the quality of the teaching, the resources for the teaching of maths and science. And so in a small way, we have gone this approach of working with our sister department on their dinner lady concept. DST, I don't think, will ever be in a position to solve the problem of dinner lady. It's not a DST initiative. It is a government initiative led by education. We can only be partners, and we can only ensure that where we've committed our limited resources, that it's being effectively done. But the reason we went into this approach is because we shared your frustration. We recognize your frustration.
We've seen some of these dinner lady schools and it worried us. And then we sat down with education and we said, well, will you allow us to adopt some of these schools so we can improve the resources and we can work? And we have to agree that we won't interfere in the classroom. We'll do it extracurricular. So the committee members recognize that sometimes when you get these partnerships with government, you've got to manage your partnerships with them as well and the extent to which you can do it. One of the things that really almost turned us off the whole initiative is when Treasury sits down and says, why are you doing work in the schools? That's not your mandate. If you want, you two departments must decide who we give the money to. Now that is a position where you see there's a budget being given to a department to work with the schools. And if you want to go there, they will take whatever resources and they will give it to the other department. And then your guess is as good as mine of what happens when all the resources for working with the schools is with the department that is running the dinner lady and choosing the dinner lady schools and so on. So I think, Chairperson, we want your support in identifying. Give us some of these schools that you visited. And then we can see how close are they to some of the dinner lady schools, you know, that the DST has adopted and what we can do. But we will not be able to take the whole dinner lady thing on. The government machinery, the way it's designed, won't permit that, and our budget won't permit either. It is something that we feel very sore about, along with you, because it's the youngsters that have to be developed. The SHARP program, it is integrated with that work I've indicated we do on Indigenous knowledge systems. So we can give you more detail on that at a later stage. The ground truthing about the work happening in the provinces, especially around the unemployed graduates and so on, we ourselves question these issues, and then what we set about doing, we put in place a database on unemployed science graduates. And we advertise for youngsters, you know, through the radio, through the newspapers and so on, and we actually developed a database of these unemployed graduates, which we then approach universities and science councils to take them on as interns. So it's not something we've just fabricated and said, you know, these unemployed graduates. And when we look at that database, the first time we did it, Malakwani, we looked at it, we saw that it's predominantly youngsters from those universities, not the UCTs and the VITs and so on. There are a sprinkling here and there from those universities, but the majority of them are from our historically black universities. So this is why we said we have to do something. But the DST, I commit to this committee, we act on evidence-based work. You know, we go and we say, let's rather have a report, let's see that this is the actual truth, as Chairperson has indicated. What's on the ground sometimes is not what people are saying. National Science Week, I'm going to take the comments that have been made into account and take it back to my colleagues, and then we'll engage with the committee as we continue with the planning for the next Science Week activity. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to give a round of applause.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Chair, I will just make a recommendation to say we need not only the reports on your partnerships and what you are mm-hmm. doing, but we need the presentation, and we also need to strengthen your working relations between the department and the select committee. Whatever projects are there, or wherever you want to bring the portfolio, also there is a select committee, mm-hmm. so that you are not left behind. We're only meeting now, it's end of the year. We may not meet beginning of the year and we did not meet. Yes. And then there's that gap. So I would recommend that there should be that frequency and a well established good working relationship. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
My question is about the information on page 39 and page 40 of the document. The Green Transport Plan to 2010 is terminated. Was there any money spent? Who's involved? Who was involved in it? Was there a private company or is it only the government? That is the one. Then the other one is on the page 40 around the HFCT, the vehicle. The project was discontinued due to cost with BMW. Now, in that situation, my question is basically the same. The spending of money, who was involved, was it a private company or government in that connection? And then can I carry on with what is third round?
Yes.
What is third round?
No, it's
continue. Thank you. And the other one goes around the National Advisory Council on Innovation, known as NACI. Will this council located within the government structure or in the plan? Such as the Planning Commission in the Presidency. Can you just give us more information about that? And then the other one goes around page 204, job evaluation. 39.34% of all jobs did the department evaluate. What is the problem? Can the department just elaborate on that? And the other one goes around page 205. The staff leaving the department, the turnover rate. There's a turnover rate of, let me just get it again here, 205. Maybe the officials or the DG will know that percentage out of a head, 205. Just bear with me, Chair. 205, there's a turnaround. No, the leave. The leave, yeah. Of staff under expiring of contract, 57.14%. That percentage worried me. Maybe it is not so a worrying factor, but maybe the explanation from the department will suit my worry there.
Can I ask you what page is that one?
Page 205. And then transfer to other public service departments. Mostly in the different departments, there's some officials go from one department to another, especially when they are trained. Then they leave the one department and go to another department. There's a 19.05% of leaving staff from the department. And then sick leave on page 213, page 213, sick leave. I get here the understanding that most of our staff in this department, they are very sick. Because the skill level 3, between level 3 and 5, there's a 75% of employees using sick leave. And in the highly skilled production level 6 and 8, 74.73. And in levels 9 and 12, 66.44. And in levels 13 to 16, 51.9. And total 65.43. Maybe there's a double allocation of sick leave. Maybe the department can just give me the explanation there. And the last one, Madam Chairperson, goes around the leases. In the other presentation from another department, there was a problem with the leases between the department and the vehicles. Companies outside the government. So when the agreement expires, then there's nothing in the government side. So we pay the lease, say around about 500,000 rand for a vehicle or something else, for a machine, tax machine or a photocopy machine. And then afterwards, when that contract expires, then there's nothing in the department, and that machine or vehicle must go back to the company. What is the situation in this department around that situation?
Yes, the department has major initiatives around the issues of incentive programs, and what I want to say is that to encourage, which are aimed to encourage private sector investment in research and development activities, the incentives, the tax incentives. What is the success rate of this scheme? And also, what is the purpose, the origin, and the motivation for providing tax rebate for research and development and innovation activities? The following question is on the SANRAN connectivity rollout. I just want to check whether there are any possibilities of expansion of this program to provincial governments. Provincial government, and also the flagship project, one on the climate change. We know that climate change has become a global topic, and what measures is the department providing to government to try and mitigate the results of the climate change? And lastly, will be the titanium value chain analysis. There are stages here that have been outlined. I want to know that at what stage is South Africa currently in terms of this value chain, and whether we have anticipated any time frame for the completion of this program. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable. Before I get to the DDG, I would like to thank Honorable Moslodi.
Thanks, sir. And on page 203, I just want to know what measures are in place to reduce the 12% staff vacancy rate on department. Thanks, sir.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'll just throw a last spanner in the works. It's again with the pre-start thing. You know, to me, the community is the people that we serve. And it's difficult for me to hear from the officials that, you know, we're looking at it and, we'll look at getting these guys jobs again. We all know, as we sit here today, that to find a job is a scarce thing. Get community workshops. So I've got a training company in my private, as a private entity as well, which I don't have anymore now, anyway. And we train people to go and sit on the stoop because there's no jobs. And I can tell you specifically in those areas where there's no agricultural land which can actually be used or type of things like that. Mining has gone to standstill. You know, if you take 300 people and you take their families, we eventually get to 1,000 people, or around about 1,000 people. And I think, you know, one must weigh up on your communities. I know this is for South Africa a big thing. I know it. But we must also weigh up the community of Prieska, what we're losing in a community. In saying that we've got this big thing... of the project that they're launching there, or are we going to have more people without food? That to me is a great concern. We have to weigh this up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Fiber. This is it. On page 40 of the annual report,
the launch of South African designed electronic prototype vehicle, which was launched on September 2008. I just want to check, when would this electric car be available for civilian use? And secondly, what is the lifespan of this battery? Are you following?
Yes,
are you?
I'm taking the notes.
Oh, no, it's
yes,
fine.
Yes.
Then the last question would be, would this electrical car be used for demonstration, you know, for the purpose of the civil service, like in your post offices?
Thank you. If I come back, quite a few questions. The comment on strengthening relationships and the reporting to the select committee, that has been noted. On the green transport plan and the hydrogen fuel cell technology question, the Department of Science and Technology had believed we could encourage government and private sector thinking around green transport using the Soccer 2010 event as a platform to demonstrate what these green vehicles look like. And we actually don't have them. So what we needed to do was to negotiate with BMW around some of the vehicles that already been used in Europe and so on, to bring those cars to South Africa and to demonstrate them. And these are the hydrogen and fuel cell technology vehicles that are currently being utilized. What we discovered to our horror is that South Africa, to get them to come and demonstrate, we would have to build the refueling stations. You know, and we would only be able to use these vehicles in, let's say, a circuit where these stations would be. And so the cost was prohibitive, and we had to back off because our treasury would not even consider, you know, doing something just for demonstration at that scale. So it wasn't something that would have been running, you know, sustainably. We would have just had them for demonstration. So there were no costs incurred on the DSC side apart from talking to BMW and trying to negotiate to bring them the side. In the first instances, BMW and other foreign car manufacturers were excited and they also wanted to do this. But then they said, what's in the fine print? To be your responsibility to make sure we've got refueling stations and so on. With the question around the National Advisory Council on Innovation, the council is appointed by the minister as an advisory body to the minister. So the council is not, it was never designed around this new planning commission that has been put in place. In terms of the interface with the planning commission, you will find that the advisory council advises the minister and then the minister engages with the new national planning commission. So there isn't a direct route for NACI to sit down with the planning commission. It will always be via the Minister of Science and Technology. Now, the question around staff leaving the department and the turnover rates that we see there and the figures that are portrayed. That breakdown, and just if I can get some help on this, it is also page? page 205. If we look at the report that has been presented there, in terms of that the turnover rate, that 57%, sorry, let me just get to it. Yes. When we look at the staff who actually left, now this is not the whole department, just the staff who left. If there were, for example, 63 people, that was the number that left. Half of those 63, more than half, 57%, left because their contract had expired.
So it's not that there's a 50% rate. It's not as if 50% of the 57% of the department staff are on contract. No, we did at that stage have a high percentage of staff of the 63 who left, who are leaving because their contract expired. When we look at the period that we are talking about, the department had just reconfigured itself into these programs. So in the interim, we had people who were under contract to the DSC. And for that 1 year or 6 months, they worked for the department and then left. I hope that provides clarity on the high 57% figure. When we look to the issue of the transfers to other departments, I can't find that one just yet. Page 205, the same page. Okay. Yes, okay, that's 19%. Again, it's 19% of 63, not 19% of the whole department. And yeah, whenever a departmental official gets a promotion post at another department, it's regarded as a transfer within the civil service. And I must make this statement. It's something that worried us, and then later on we realized, but actually it's good because people remain within the government system. A person who works at DST, even at the deputy director level, they are highly valued by other government departments. And it's possibly because then they indicate they've worked in close relationship with science councils, with research councils, and with other government departments. It's the one department that is forced to work with other government departments, because like I said before, science doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens in the energy space, it happens in the environmental space, water and so on. And so we do find it hard to hold on to good people who've got their qualifications, they've got experience, and they are better prospects. So we do a thorough analysis, even down to why are the people leaving. And then on the sick leave issue, there we've got, this is on page 213. The sick leave that you see there and the highly skilled people at levels, let's say, levels 9 to 12, highly skilled supervisors, 526 days were taken, but not by a particular member when you count all of the leave days from all of the people who took sick leave. Then we see that it was only involved 97 people of the entire staff complement. And the percentages of them using sick leave or using their own leave is slightly different. I trust the question was why the numbers are so high, but it's the way we actually read the presentation of the ratios.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Is that the way of giving the and calculating the information in the book?
What I can say, Chairperson, in response is in the first instance, we try to comply with what the PFMA requirements are. But what we sometimes do is do a deeper analysis, because we need to understand at what level the sick leave being taken, how it's going to impact on the operations of the department. We actually completed an HIV/AIDS prevalence study. It took a very long time to get off the ground because we needed to get staff to even agree to participating in the HIV/AIDS prevalence. We wanted to test the waters on how vulnerable is the organization in terms of replacing people, in terms of allowing for leave that will need to be taken with people being requiring treatment and so on. But PFMA is complied with, and then we have a deeper analysis for our own purposes.
Okay. Maybe before I allow Honorable just to make a follow up on the leave, you know.
DPFA, yeah.
DDG.
Yes,
maybe on the issue of the leave, but I'm not going to mention the department. That we have found out that the issue of sick leave, you know, the officials are using it to their advantage. Where you find that they are taking the sick leave, they get paid, and you know, maybe that is why like we are more concerned.
Yes,
I'm going to give to Honorable Divisions just to make a follow-up around that, because really we want to know actually, is it the actual leave, sick leave, or what is happening?
Chairperson, it's not exactly on the sick leave, but actually on the leaving of the of staff. Now, we have a certain vacancy rate also in this department. Now, in this department, we allow some of our best, maybe our best officials, to be, I don't want to use the word redeployed, but actually taking up in another department. Now, there's a vacancy rate also in our department. Why don't we make use of those people to actually to get them involved and also to get a post in our department, then allowing them to go to another one?
Before this is the report, maybe to add also my question would be, do the department have a retention strategy?
Yes, Chairperson, we do have a retention strategy. We've even introduced a non-financial reward and recognition and reward strategies. We are attempting by a range of means to try and keep our staff. But labor law prevents us from actually stopping a person if they want to go. The ultimate thing is, if that person has accumulated experience, let's say on the work we do on climate change, they become such a valuable asset to the Department of Environment Affairs or the Department of Water Affairs, and you can't stop them. So we made counter offers. We try different means, even before the person thinks of leaving, by saying we must recognize good work, we must reward it beyond the bonuses and so on that get paid, but through other non-financial mechanisms. It is something we are struggling with, and I appreciate very much that the committee members have picked this up as something we are battling with. But it's something that we have come to terms with. There was one stage where science councils were complaining to government that they were losing staff into government and into the university. And then we recognized that actually what we should see our science council as the breeding ground for the next decision makers in government and the leaders in the universities. So as long as we're not losing the people to another country, but we're losing it to within our system, we say that we will just simply as a department have to deal with those losses. We'll have to maintain our performance despite the fact that people don't stay very long. I'm one of the people that stays long, Malika, 1 year too. We part of the furniture. But the hard working furniture.
The job evaluation.
Yes, I see that, but I'm struggling to see where those job evaluations were.
204.
The job evaluations with the new posts that have been created has taken us time, and we expected that we were not going to complete it all in 1 year. So having completed close to 40% in the 2008-09 year, we feel we did well, and we believe that during the course of this year,
we will actually have completed all of our job evaluations. In actual fact, I think I can go on record as saying that for this year, 9-10, we only have some very, very new posts that have been created where the job evaluations are still underway. So for the previous year, we cleared 40-odd%, and for this year, we've been clearing the rest of the backlog. There was the issue of the leasing of vehicles and what happens when the contract expires. Can I hand it over to Mara Kovane?
Okay. Thank you, Majuri, and thanks, Chair. I think on the issue of the leases, we are fortunate in that we do not have too many vehicles that we are leasing in the department. We own several vehicles that we are using for deliveries and stuff. And on the leasing that we have a three-year lease, with which is an operational lease as well, and that is for the copy machines and the fax. And the lease is going to expire this financial year, and we are definitely going to renew. So we really don't have any problems in that area.
Okay. The question around the vacancy rate. This is something we applied our minds to in our executive meeting. And what we picked up is a situation where we've said if we were looking at our risk management, then there's a level where you say something has to be done. This is bad. Then there's a level where you say we can live with this. Right? And what we've got is we've got a 12% vacancy rate. Now, if you take our turnover, the people leaving, and then the processes that ensue while you're trying to advertise, recruit, interview, send people now for these new competency-based assessments, it gives you time where you actually have a vacancy. And we said that 12% rate in terms of our vacancies is something that we can live with. It's not compromising the work of the department, but we are aware that we have something that must be monitored closely so that we don't start having a higher vacancy rate, that posts get filled as soon as we find that they can be filled. Then there's the issue of the incentives program. This came into effect on the 2nd of November 2006. We had to wait as a department for companies to start filing claims for these tax incentives. So we could not even start accepting claims the next year, end of March 2007, because it was too early. Companies first had to familiarize themselves with our administration system. So we spent the whole of 2007 developing an administration system, and by the beginning of 2008, we started with SARS, with Revenue Service, collecting that information. The response rate was not very good. It was very slow in the early stages. But in this 2009 year, we found that the number of companies responding has more than doubled. And we've prepared a report on the response to the tax incentives and explained the administration system we put in place in a report to Cabinet. We are in the processes of presenting that report to the Parliamentary Committee, and we will bring that report to the Select Committee as well for presentation, the responses on the tax incentives. The issue of whether we, and okay, sorry, there was another question around that, about what was the motivation. We know that government runs programs like DST research grant funding, DTI support programs, and there are companies who pick up these grants from these different government departments. Those companies are usually ones that are well able to prepare a proposal so that they meet all of your criteria and then they get that grant funding. What we've learned on the international stage is that your
smaller engineering companies are so busy with their manufacturing and with their R&D that they don't have the time nor the capacity to write these wonderful research proposals. And what those governments do is they recognize that indirect incentives are the better mechanism. So that on the one hand, you don't leave it to some government bureaucrat to decide whether this company is going to get that R&D support. You leave the decision on the R&D with the company. As long as you're doing R&D, you get the allowance. So it takes to see some decision making away from government and it puts it with these small engineering companies. You also find that some of the companies go into areas that are unique, innovative, and they want to keep secret their work for the longest period possible. So by allowing them to do R&D and claim from the tax man later, it's a much more practical proposition to them than going to the DTI and applying for funds or going to the DST. So we have a mix of incentives, direct grants as well as the tax incentives, the indirect grants. There's also the argument we put to the fiscus that R&D spending has a very, very small private return. There's enough empirical evidence in studies that have been conducted in South Africa and elsewhere that companies, when they do R&D, they're only able to claw back about 27% of the returns on the outcome of that R&D. If you invent, even let's say this pen, and you start producing the pen and marketing it, I guarantee you in less than a month, your competitors have discovered what this pen is made of. They are able then to start designing something that is just slightly different, but it's actually this pen. And so they get round all IP laws and so on because they claim it's something different. So they're riding off what you have been spending on your R&D until you got to this product. So we say the private returns are small and they're short. The biggest returns are the social returns. Because for every company that invents something and then it employs people to work and manufacture that thing, those people leave and they go and work for other companies and they take knowledge with them. And that knowledge gets passed down. And that knowledge gets built also into school curricula and so on. So we're saying when we look at what happens with the outputs of an R&D project, it diffuses through the society and the economy. And because it has those social returns, this is why government looks at encouraging, making it less costly for companies to do R&D. That's the objective behind the R&D, the tax incentive. The flagship program, with our 10-year innovation plan, we have opened up an entire grand challenge around climate change and the broader global change issues. So we rank this as a very high priority, alongside the priorities on space and on your energy. The climate change issue is something which we are very, very committed to. Now, the mitigation would actually be, how do you change your energy options? You're mitigating, you're trying to avoid more carbon dioxide emissions into the atmosphere. But when you're looking at what do provinces do and what do local municipalities do who are not producing the power, the power issues is left to the Eskoms and the independent power producers and so on. What the provinces and municipalities do is they adapt, and this is the other side of the climate change issue, the adaptation side, as well as the responding to the impact of climate change. Vulnerable cities like Cape Town, Durban, that have been hit by extreme climate events, they've got to adapt. They've got to look at how they respond. And one of our first offerings that we're going to be giving provinces and local municipalities is what we call a risk and vulnerability atlas, where we'll be mapping which are the local municipalities and the provinces that are going to be most vulnerable and in what respect. Because DST can rather use, put together for you, knowledge that is available about what can be expected, so that it helps municipalities and local governments achieve better planning. Another thing that we are looking at is we are working closely with agriculture on adaptation strategies. In future, you will not get certain agricultural crops growing in certain areas. Where it becomes drier, those crops will be vulnerable to the droughts. Where it becomes wetter, plants won't thrive in those conditions. That's not their normal growing conditions. What we look at is we can have biotechnology to make crops more drought resistant, so we can use our work that we're doing on biotechnology, but we also want to do a lot more experimental work to test out what will grow in the new climate as things change over time. So there's a considerable amount, there's an entire plan of action, a science plan and a strategy around climate change. On the titanium one, where we are at the moment is that we have successfully produced that titanium powder. We produced it at laboratory scale. So we started by producing it at 1 milligram. Then we went and we produced it at 100 grams. So what we're demonstrating to the world is we can produce this powder. But now what we need is we need to show the world that we'll get the same consistency. The powder will show the same results, performance requirements, if we're producing it at 2 kilograms and then later at a ton and later at 500 ton level. And so we are at the stage where we have asked Treasury to give us funds for that 500 ton plant by 2013. So we're en route there. But the rest of the aerospace industry, global players like Airbus and Boeing, are actually very excited with the work we're doing. Boeing actually was ready to sign an uptake agreement to buy 10% of their titanium supply from South Africa. They actually handed us that deal. The only problem is it was contingent on us buying more aircraft. So that fell away because South African Airways doesn't have the money for those aircraft. But nevertheless, what they demonstrated is that they are very excited about the results that are coming through. We expect that by 2018, we should be supplying 20,000 tons of titanium powder into the global world market. 2018 is the target. On the Prisca issue, I've committed that we will come back with a full presentation. I've noted the concerns, and we will address that. With the car jewel, I can't actually comment on where we are. Right now, there are processes underway to look for commercialization partners, to look for money to set up the factory. So it's at a very advanced stage. As soon as the company actually gets an investment partner, they will start manufacturing because the design, everything has been completed. They've tested the technology, they've had a demonstration, and so on. So one of the issues that we had considered was to say we could start a market, government using its leveraging power with the police force, with the one design for Juul had been around delivery tax vehicles, utility vehicles, that you would look at the health services and all kinds of government departments. So that is something that was under consideration. I cannot honestly give you an answer on where that process is, but it's something that we can always come back with on response, because we've noted the question. Chairperson, I trust that I've managed to address the concerns to some extent.
thank you, department. This is it. You know, I'm saying your energy. it makes members to have more questions. So I'm just going to give them. This is the last round.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think what my colleague also just asked about the jewel was that it's a private entity running it at the moment, and we would just like to know, was the investment at this stage from government, and how much was invested by government, if there was any investment by government in producing that vehicle, as we do know that they are looking for private money to on mass production, send it to Europe and sell it there. But what I want to know is if government helped fund this whole project, and how much was funded, and for what reason was it funded by government, if so.
Thanks, sir. On page 135, what measures have the department put in place to address the Auditor General finding that the department has inconsistently reported on the performance indicators and targets as they contain in their corporate plan? Thanks, sir. It's my last one.
And it's the last question. The last question for the day.
And that question David will answer, because he's been working with the Auditor General and all of those. On the dual car, the DST, the South African government's investment, was only in developing the battery technology. So it was R&D at an early stage. And then there was a recognition with these universities and research organizations that they could actually use this battery for an electric car. And that is where the DST work stops, because the R&D funding supported them to develop the technology. We've introduced this IPR Act that we want a slice, we want a return on public funded R&D. So if they succeed in commercializing Juul, there will be revenue streams around, royalties and so on, but it will only relate to the battery, not to the actual car and the sale of the car. We've had a similar, and the source of that R&D support was through our innovation fund. Likewise, the same innovation fund supported the work of Professor Vivian Albert at University of Johannesburg in the thin film solar photovoltaic panel, where the technology was licensed to a German company, because there's no company in South Africa that can produce those panels. But it was not an exclusive license. So what we have is the German company is up and running, and the second license is now going to South Africa, and where we will now actually have manufacturing capacity around that. But again, there'll be royalty streams coming back to the DST funding pool. So
how much was involved? Because I know through other politicians that a lot of money was.
Madam Chair, sorry. I think I'm also getting so tired, because this has been a long meeting. But sorry, I would just like to know the cost involved. I understand that it will be royalties, etc. But from what I heard through some channels, that it was a very, very expensive setup, and I would like to know what the cost was to government. Thank you, Madam Chair.
That information we will forward to the committee as soon as we get back to the department. David, do you have the question on the...
Thanks, Chairperson. The issue of the inconsistency between the indicators in the corporate strategy and the performance report, we are addressing it in the current financial year. And that is that we are making sure that all the indicators that are reflected in the corporate strategy get reported on during the year, and also at the end of the year. So we are working on it.
I can conclude, Chairperson, that the one major weakness we've discovered in the department, or we've now become fully aware of, is that we are very bad in terms of reporting on our work, not just in terms of communicating it and letting ordinary South Africans know about it, But even when it comes, we get so engrossed in the work we're doing that when it comes to putting together these reports, we need it to be more structured and so on. And this is the work that David is actually now been... this is work that's been put on David's table. His unit was specially created so that he can keep us honest.
Thank you. Let me just take this opportunity, you know, just before I close the meeting, I think there are issues that we've noted as the committee that we want the department, you know, to finish up with the information. DDG, like you indicated that when you talked the issue of the Naledi schools, that from your side, the side of your department, your department decided to adopt schools. We would like if the already schools which the department has adopted, we should be finished with that list. And secondly, the issue of, you know, this discrepancies around the employment of the graduates. We would like the department to do more research around the matter and would like that information to be available to this committee. The issue of Briska, I think Honorable Baiba, like I indicated that we are representing the province, so would like to get more information so that the Honorable Member can report back to his constituency. And this is some of the issues that we have picked up. The issue of, like, you have undertaken that you are going to consider, you know, the methods that the AG has identified as concerns, try to improve on that. Maybe before I thought I should just also join Honorable Hasmina that we commend the department that has for obtaining an unqualified audit report. But lastly, I think it's very crucial also to reiterate that as the committee we are not happy. We like to register our dissatisfaction on the unavailability of the ministry together with the DG of the department, hoping that it was for the first and it will never happen again. On this note, I would like to thank everybody, the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.